The Public Safety Finance Committee will come to order. Probably have members drifting in with the weather the way it is. It's slicker than I anticipated on the highways. Today we're going to review the budget of the Minnesota Department of Public Safety, and I believe we're scheduled tomorrow also to review your budget, so we can take as long as we need and start off with Commissioner Campion.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. Thank you for the opportunity. Members of the committee, Michael Campion is my name. I'm the Commissioner of Public Safety, and with me is the out-of-breath Deputy Commissioner, Mary Ellison, who just arrived. So we appreciate the opportunity that you've given us to give an overview. Very quickly, the governor's budget recommendation for the Department of Public Safety for the 2008-2009 biennium is $605.079 million in direct appropriations. This budget consists of $205+ million from the state's general fund and $399 million from all other funds, and is a total of a 22.3% increase from fiscal years 2006-2007. The funding for the Department of Public Safety is comprised of 28% from the trunk highway funds, 34% from state general funds, 35% from special revenue funds, and 3% from the highway user tax distribution fund. With that, for the specifics of the governor's budget, I'll turn over to Deputy Commissioner Mary Ellison.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner Ellison.
Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Mary Ellison, Deputy Commissioner of the Department of Public Safety. What I thought I would do today is to go through the one-page handout that we provided prior to today. It has on the top of it Minnesota Department of Public Safety 08-09 budget priorities. And then what I would do is just highlight the speaking points here, direct you to the page in the book that has more detail on each one of these budget initiatives. And then in the audience, we have division directors and staff people who can provide a great deal more specifics, depending upon the questions that all of you have.
Commissioner Ellison, I think that would be fine, but I also want to have some process where we could go through each division of DPS. Is that, could we do that? I don't know.
Mr. Chair, it's up to you.
Okay. Well, let's go through. These are change items that you want to highlight first, and then we can go back. Why don't we try that, and since that's the way you have it scripted, and then we can go back.
All right, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, first of all, let me, again, direct your attention to this handout. The first item on the handout is the 911 armor, $23 million recommendation. This is the detail on this budget change item is located on page 83 of your budget books. Basically, what we're doing here is we're completing the 800 megahertz 911 armor system in the state of Minnesota. It provides the authority to change the 911 fee, which is the fee that has funded the construction of the armor system to date. The current fee that we each pay on our landlines and cell phone lines is 65 cents per month. The governor is suggesting that we have the authority to raise that to 75 cents in 2009, 85 cents in 2010, and 95 cents in 2011. What that would do is allow the Commissioner of Finance to sell bonds to pay for the cost of building out this system for the rest of the state of Minnesota.
Are there any questions? We're going to have we have a separate day scheduled for CrimNet and armor, so we can go into that in more detail. Commissioner, listen, I just have a quick question. Was there, Mr. Carger and I were talking about that there is some statutory language about relative to state agencies undertaking an information and technology project going through the Office of Technology. Does this have to do that? The armor appropriations, or has that already been done?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, that has been done.
Thank you, Commissioner.
The next item on the sheet is the Crime Victim Reparations Program. Unfortunately, violent crime in Minnesota has been rising, particularly in the city of Minneapolis. In 2005, the rise was 11.5%. This means that more victims of violent crime are requesting assistance from the Crime Victim Reparations Program, so this budget request is for an additional $500,000 for the coming biennium. for the Crime Victim Reparations Program.
Okay.
Next one is the Crime Victim Notification System. By statute, local law enforcement and corrections officials have to notify crime victims when the custody status of an offender is reduced. Over the past few years, we have been able to use federal funds to build an automated notification system in the state of Minnesota. Those federal funds are not going to be available in the future, and so we are requesting $910,000 for the coming biennium to ensure that that system continues to exist and expand in the state of Minnesota.
Commissioner, can you just explain just, I remember when we first funded this project, but how does a victim know about the program that let's say it's a domestic assault victim and her spouse is in one of our institutions? How do they know that the program exists?
District Chair, members of the committee, law enforcement would tell them, victim advocates would tell them that the program exists. As I mentioned, by statute, law enforcement corrections have the responsibility of notifying victims. So they would tell them about the system and how they register for the system and get onto it and receive information. That actually is located, I didn't mention that, on page 71 of your budget books, too, if you want to read more about that.
Members have any questions on this item? Okay, Commissioner, proceed, please.
The next item on the agenda is the forensic scientist's request for the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension. That detail is located on page 31 of your budget books. We are requesting the ability to add 20 new forensic scientists to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension Laboratory over the next 2 years. The goal is to reduce turnaround time on evidence that is submitted to the lab for processing.
Commissioner, I have a couple of questions about this because those of us who have been around this committee for a while know that it seems like this has been a biennial request by the BCA for more scientists. In fact, when you were on the University Avenue, it seemed like there were requests for more scientists, that seems like you haven't been able to fill the positions in the past. Is something, am I correct, and has something changed?
Mr. Chair, I'm going to ask Frank Dolish to come forward. He can explain this in greater detail. I don't know that it's so much a question of filling the scientist position. I think there's a number of things happening here. It takes at least a year to train a forensic scientist with the new requirements that are involved in processing DNA evidence and that sort of thing. We find that with the new tests that are available and the new evidence processing that is able to be done, we get more and more requests. So the more that the science advances, the higher the expectations are on the part of law enforcement and prosecutors, and so they ask for more tests per case. And so I think those are a couple of the factors, and then I'll ask Mr. Dolish to talk a little bit more in detail.
Mr. Dolish, could you introduce yourself for the record, please?
My name is Frank Dolish. I'm the lab director of the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension Lab. Representative Pamer, chairman, committee, in terms of being able to fill forensic science positions, it depends on what level we're trying to fill them. If we're trying to get trained people, which usually means we have to steal them from another crime lab from Wisconsin or Iowa or something like that, we probably aren't as successful doing that. It takes a big discrepancy in pay ranges to make that happen. When we fill at the trainee level, we usually have literally hundreds of candidates to be able to fill the trainee position, and that's a good thing. The downside is, Deputy Commissioner Ellison mentioned, is that when we hire at the trainee level, it takes us, depending on the scientific specialty, probably 9 months to a year and a half before they have the training that's necessary for them to be able to start working on cases right away. We are going to be working on a proposal to DOOR to do a Hayes study of the forensic scientist series with the hope that we can raise the salary level to be able to draw trained people.
Mr. Dolish, are you going to hire these 20? You hope to hire these 22, these 20 scientists in 07? or an 08? Or is this over the biennium? Mr. Dole?
Chairman, that's over the biennium. It would be 10 each year. And we're getting ready to, even in anticipation of this, advertising at some professional meetings, letting people around the country know that we're anticipating some vacancies so that we can try to get trained people. The difference is that if we can get trained people, we can have an impact on that turnaround time in a very short period of time. If we have to go after somebody right out of school as a trainee, it will be, again, 9 months to a year and a half before they're trained and can have an impact.
Thank you. I have a couple of questions here, but you might want to check on page 46. It doesn't seem like the 20 adds up with the FTEs that you have listed on that budget page. Representative Hilstrom?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Two questions. First, do we pay comparably to other states so that once we do spend 9 months training these people, we aren't losing them to other states? So how is our retention rate? And second, when we took the tour of the BCA, we found that, or we heard that there are so many requests now to be in court that they have to be prioritized, and it's kind of on a first-come, first-served basis. So are you working on something like video conferencing to with the courts to see if we can have more lab technicians or forensic scientists actually spend more time in the lab rather than running around the state testifying in person?
Mr. Dolish.
Chairman, Representative Hilstrom, we are looking at video conferencing. We have actually approached a number of courts, and of course being able to use that will be dependent on individual courts accepting that as a way for somebody to be able to testify in lieu of them being in person. We have done it on a few drug cases, and I couldn't tell you, but I can find out for you which counties we've made those arrangements on. And we continue to have discussions to look at that aspect of it. And I'm forgetting what the other question was.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. It was about whether or not we pay at a comparable rate so after we train these scientists, they actually stay in Minnesota and we don't just continue to train them and have them leave.
Mr. Dean.
Chairman, Representative Hilstrom. Our retention is really pretty good if you look at other labs around the country. We have lost a few to the private sector, and I'm not too sure whether we'll ever be in a position to compete with them. Our salary ranges are probably comparable to other, at least other crime labs in the Midwest. I am concerned that if there's growth of county labs in Minnesota, that they are paying more. For example, Hennepin County Sheriff's Lab does pay more than we do. So if they have a vacancy, chances are they would get somebody trained from us. But at least that keeps it in Minnesota. So,
thank you.
Representative Eastman.
Mr. Chair, if I might just point out, the budget detail for the change item is on page 31. I think you might have been, you referenced page 43?
46, Commissioner.
Mr. Chair, I think the difference might be, I'd have to look at it, but I think the difference might be this is the budget, the budget change item is referenced on page 31. So that could be the difference?
Well, we can look at it later, okay. Commissioner Ellison, but if you look at the FTEs, they don't add up if you were to actually hire 20 forensic scientists. It would be 10 the first year would be 108, and then 10 the following year, the biennium, would be 118. Sir, could you introduce yourself for the record if you want to just clarify this?
Mr. Chairman, for the record, I'm Frank Ahrens, Finance Director, Public Safety. A lot of things going on here when you're looking at FTE, so you just bear with me. Okay. I just lost my page.
I think it's on page 46 of our budget book. It might, I don't know if it's on something different for you.
Well, Mr. Chairman, as you know, there's multiple funding of positions that are going on here. We have positions funded out of general fund, special revenue fund, as well as federal dollars. There is overall the positions that are funded through federal dollars actually go down from what we have in state fiscal year 2007. We had a total of 2.84 positions funded from federal dollars in 2007, and by the time you get to fiscal year 2009, we're down to no positions funded with federal dollars. You will note that there is a compensation adjustment, which basically funds, it's equivalent to about 2.3 FTE the first year and 5.2 FTE the second year of the biennium. However, in our original base funding for this activity, through the budget process, the fact that our base remains the same, the dollars that funds positions in 7 was the same amount that we had in 8 and 9 from our base, and with our base we would be down about 4.6 positions the first year and 8.4 positions. In other words, if we did not have a base compensation adjustment to this budget activity, we would actually be losing 4.6 positions the first year and a total of 8.4 for the biennium. We gained, however, 2.3 the first year and 5.2. So if you compare 8.4 to 5.2, we're down about 3 positions right there. So that's what I'm saying is it's a little more complicated than what you see on this page in the reconciliation. We are actually adding 10 positions the first year with the change item and additional 10 positions the second year, but it doesn't appear that when as you look at the FTE because of these other complications involved in the funding of the positions.
Thank you, Mr. Ahrens. I think we get it.
Mr. Chair, if I could also provide some clarity to an answer that you asked originally. Has the BCA or Public Safety requested initial scientists going back to when they were on University Avenue? Yes, the answer to that is yes. And over the last 5 years, submissions to the laboratory both in St. Paul and Bemidji have increased probably 30%. There are new tests now that are available for forensic science examinations that weren't available 5, 6, 7 years ago. Certainly there are because of better education on the part of law enforcement. More submissions are being made because the officers are aware of different and more comprehensive examinations. Also, Mr. Chair, members, both of those facilities, both the one in Bemidji and the one in St. Paul, were built with expansion in mind. The day that both of those buildings were open, they were not at full capacity. They were designed to be buildings meant to accommodate all kinds of activity for the next 25, maybe 30 years. So there is room for expansion in both buildings, and I think we're just following the normal course of events as those expectations continue. And I think this governor's recommendation is a response to what we have identified as a significant stakeholder group. They want that turnaround time reduced for any number of different reasons. Crime victims are real intense on a shorter turnaround time for sexual assault examinations as well as the wide variety of other people who are affected by the turnaround time in the laboratory.
Commissioner, thank you. I think my concern, and maybe we can talk about this later, is that it seems to me that you couldn't fill those positions over the years because you didn't have qualified scientists that were applying for those positions. I could be wrong on that, and I'm just wondering what happened to the appropriations then that were made to to fund those additional scientists, did they go back to the general fund or did they stay in the BCA budget? But if I'm wrong on that, you can correct me. Commissioner?
I think you're in error. I don't know if you'd be wrong, Mr. Chairman. I wouldn't call you wrong, but I don't think the money has been spent on other priorities, if that is a concern of yours. Money for forensic scientists have been spent on forensic scientists, and we have increased the number there, and every year there seems to be a greater need for turnaround time reduction, and those in the requests have been the request for funding has been used for forensic scientists, and really nothing other than that, okay. If that is your concern.
Yes.
Mr. Chair, I would just say, too, that if at the end of a biennium, if we have state dollars that are left over, they do revert back to the general fund. That's the standard course, unless we get approval from the legislature to carry over funds into the next fiscal year, the next biennium.
Okay. We have more questions. Representative Eastland.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just maybe you could just this is kind of where my question was, and maybe we could just back up and try and just come at it from a little more practical point of view for those of us who can't get into all the details of the budget. But maybe you could just tell us, how many forensic scientists did you have 5 years ago? How many do you have today? And how many do you expect to have if this is approved?
Mr. Dulles, do you want to take a shot at this?
Chairman, Representative, to get accurate figures, I would probably have to work with Frank Ahrens, our finance director. Over the last two bienniums, you probably realize that there was no salary supplement that came with our budget. So Frank Ahrens was describing what would happen in the next biennium if we didn't get a salary supplement, that we would have to hold positions open. And so how did we balance our base budget over the last two bienniums without salary supplements? We held positions open. We didn't fill them. So we're probably, from that process, 10 positions approximately were held open to meet the salary base. We have gotten additional positions in from the legislature during that period of time that have gone to targeted activities. We've got positions for last year for working on the DNA database. We got an agreement with the FBI to set up a mitochondrial lab, and that's being funded through an agreement with the FBI. So we have a number of staff that have come on board. So it is difficult to count, because as Mr. Ahrens described, it's a fluctuating thing. I will assure the chairman that whenever we've had a position open that you have given us, we have filled it, and that we haven't had trouble filling those positions, other than we haven't always been able to get a trained person. We always are able to get trainees and have done that.
So, Mr. Dulles, Mr. Ahrens could, it sounds like Representative Eastland wanted some numbers, so maybe you could provide the committee with the numbers just at a later date. Representative Eastland, follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Then, just a couple more questions. How many positions are currently open? How many are held open?
Mr. Dulles?
Due to the process that I was describing, where our salary base couldn't pay for FTEs, probably about 10. We have some positions that are open because we're in the process of filling them. We had an individual that left us up in Bemidji, so we are filling that position and are in the process of that. But we can only fill based on what our base budget can fund.
Representative Eastland?
Mr. Chair, one more question there. Commissioner, you mentioned that the system is built for some expansion We have room for some expansion. And I guess if we could understand what the numbers are as far as the current complement of scientists that are there, can we get some kind of an idea of what kind of expansion we are capable of? I mean,
yes, Mr. Chair, Senator, Representative Eastland, between Bemidji and St. Paul, and depending on work schedules, there's additional 50 scientists that could go into those two facilities, above and beyond the complement of scientists that are employed in both facilities now. Now, there may even be more if you worked a night shift, if you broke up the shifts, and, for instance, you worked weekends, 4-day weekend, you know, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, Monday, something like that. If there was additional flexibility, there probably could even be additional scientists above and beyond 50. But somewhere around 50 is what those two facilities could accommodate right now.
Representative Haas.
Thank you very much. I have some questions. I'm mostly for education purposes for me. If I'm understanding this, you've taken 10 previous positions, held the positions, but dispersed the money into the salaries of the other positions. Is that correct?
Mr. Dolish?
Chairman, Representative Hawes, that's probably as good a description as you could come up with.
Okay, and I have no problem with that. I mean, you've got to do what you do to survive. But those 10 positions, then, are just on the books without dollars. Is that correct?
Commissioner, Mr. Dolish? Commissioner, somewhat.
Mr. Chairman, yes. I would also give, just so we can understand the answer, to the best that the BCA or the public safety can do, if the money, the salary for the 10 vacancies goes to other scientists within the forensic science area, it's not to pay, generally speaking, it's not to pay people in another area.
Well, don't Representative take me wrong. This is no way critical. I'm just trying to understand it.
I understand.
Okay. And so now when we add 20 new when we add the dollars for 20 positions, 10 of those will go to fill the dollars of the 10 positions that the money is vacated in. Is that right? So you're only gaining 10?
Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, Representative Haas, it may or may not. It just depends. Let me to add some clarity to maybe the whole discussion. If you look at item number 11 on the next page, the governor has recommended a compensation adjustment of $2.18 million. So in the next biennium, Representative Haas.
Commissioner, which page are you talking about?
On the one pager that you were provided.
Oh, okay.
And it also is mentioned throughout the budget document.
Go ahead.
For instance, Representative Haas, the next two-year biennium, if there are 10 scientists that retire or take other jobs or whatever, this $2.1 million, part of that money goes to fill those vacancies. So if we get 20 scientists within the next biennium, that will be 20 new scientists above and beyond the complement we have now. We won't have to take that money to fill vacancies that occur within the biennium.
Okay. Now when we...
Representative Haas.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm sorry for cutting off. Mr. Chair, thank you. Now when we're either adding 10 or 20, and I'm with you on either one, I guess, is the equipment for adding those either in a facility and in lab equipment riding along with this somewhere in this budget so that we know that we have facilities for these people to operate?
Mr. Dolish?
Chairman, Representative Haas, we have the budget and the equipment to be able to handle this additional staff. There is a little bit of money in this to cover some things like computers, I believe. I'd have to go back and look at the detail, but a lot of our scientific equipment we've been able to equip with federal grants and building construction funds when we moved into the building. So for this group coming in, we should be equipped to be able to handle that staff.
Thank you, sir. Thank you, Chair.
Representative Hilstrom has a question.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What number of scientists does the current workload require if we wanted to, on an ongoing basis, not continue to add to the backlog? And are you asking for that many, or do you have a plan to get to that number over some time? Or will this number that you're requesting actually take care of the backlog and continue to bring us current?
Mr. Dolish?
Chairman, Representative Hilstrom, I'm hesitating a little bit here because it depends on what your expectations are. Will we, with these 20 positions, eliminate the backlog? The answer to that is no. If you look in the governor's proposal, we are going to be aiming these positions to reduce the turnaround time in the high priority cases, homicides, crimes against persons. If you wanted to completely reduce that backlog and what kind of turnaround time do you want, these are all questions that you'd have to factor into that. It would probably require more, but the focus here is on those violent crimes and trying to make a significant reduction in those. We're also constantly looking at other ways to manage our caseload. We've introduced a lot of robotics into the lab. We're all continually looking at process to see if we can have an effect without adding staff, if you will. And we've actually done a lot of that, and we'd probably be a lot worse off if it weren't for new technologies and robotics and looking at processes. We would probably be a lot further in the hole, and we intend to continue to do that as well.
Mr. Chair.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. But are you continuing to add to the backlog, or are you at least keeping pace and diminishing the backlog?
Mr. Dolish.
Chairman, Representative Hilstrom, we're pretty much keeping pace right now, and that's a thing that goes up and down for us. Like a lot of things, there will be months where we have a lot of sexual assaults, for example, and the backlog will grow. I'll have a couple of staff will go out on maternity leave, and so I'll have less people that can work on the cases, so things build up for a while. When they come back, or those times when the caseload goes down, we start to catch up. But I've told people that I've been in this field for almost 40 years now, and when I first started in Wisconsin, we talked about the backlog and turnaround time, and if I come back 40 years from now, whoever is sitting at this table will be talking about turnaround time and backlog. I think this is the governor's request is a honest proposal to try to deal with this backlog. And again, we're looking at aiming at violent crimes in this particular case.
Commissioner Campion.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilstrom, there is a phenomenon that takes place that people recognize in the criminal justice system that's called the CSI syndrome. People watch the TV, they watch movies, they think this turnaround time or evidence is analyzed instantaneously. That's just not true. But there's a heightened expectation that this evidence should be analyzed within a matter of hours or days, and no matter what takes place, that will never occur. There are two things that affect turnaround time. One is just the volume of submissions. The other is the business practice. The laboratory has embarked on a couple of different pilot projects to prioritize and to and to not analyze some evidence until it's absolutely necessary in an attempt to address that evidence that really is critical to have analyzed in a very short period of time. I think I mentioned before this committee the rapes in St. Paul, for instance, the DNA analysis on that was turned around in, you know, 5 or 6 days. If there is evidence that is turned in that there is no suspect and there is no potential violent crime, maybe it's fingerprints off a stolen vehicle, that might take a couple months. So it's a constant quest to try to prioritize and to try to triage what evidence is critical and what evidence can wait a little bit longer and what evidence somewhere might fall in the middle. But the expectation that all this evidence can be turned around almost instantaneously is derived from various, frankly, media shows. But it's just simply unrealistic. If we tripled the amount of scientists, you wouldn't turn it around instantaneously or in a matter of hours. It's just simply unrealistic.
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Do you know if, because of the backlog, that there has been any impact in cases in court? I understand that it can't be instantaneous and the public might have that expectation. That's not what I'm asking for. But what I want to make sure is that we are not, I want to make sure that we still can convict somebody because we have timely turnaround and that we are not resulting in cases going offline or not being pursued because our backlog is resulting in a problem.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I will assure you that when I was over there in the current regime that is in charge of the BCA now, if a police officer or a prosecutor called and said a conviction is contingent on the analysis of some evidence, that evidence would be done almost immediately. That in and of itself also does affect turnaround time. If that evidence is put at the top of the list, your evidence might end up being delayed for a matter of, say, days or maybe a week because of the urgency of the evidence that might be critical to a conviction or an acquittal. It's a very complicated issue that has a lot of dynamics at work. But I assure you that this is we are very sensitive to the concept that justice delayed is justice denied, and the fact that turnaround time is critical. And the governor was informed enough, and this is a very reasonable address. I mean, a very reasonable proposal to address the turnaround time. And in 2 years, we very well may be back here, Mr. Chairman, saying that we've made a lot of accomplishments, but we'll continue to update you with honest information.
Thank you, Commissioner. Before we proceed here, we do have a quorum, and I would ask if we can have a motion to approve the minutes from January 31st and February 1st.
So moved.
Representative Haas moves that we approve the minutes from January 31st and February 1st. Is there any discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails. I also want to make the announcement about tonight's meeting that we are having the State of the Twin Cities meeting at Room 15 of the State Capitol. And you're invited to go to Room 328 for pizza, provided by the Senate, I understand, for members and staff, and we will be hearing from the two mayors of our respective cities, police chiefs, and where's Representative Zellers? Will we having the sheriffs or not? No, okay. Okay. Members, the hearing actually starts at 6 o'clock. Okay. Commissioner Ellison, do you want to continue with the change item?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, let me just clarify one thing that we talked about earlier. You asked me about the Armor 911 proposal and whether that had gone through the Office of Enterprise Technology. And what had happened with that is there was a confusion in the beginning as to whether a radio system fit within the categories of what they were looking at. And so that was submitted late. And so it was submitted after the normal projects were submitted. And it is being reviewed or has been reviewed, I've been told.
Okay. Thank you, Commissioner Allison.
The next item is the CRIMNET changes. That's those are detailed on page 29 of your budget books. Basically, the $15.9 million that is requested for the biennium advances the CRIMNET projects in the following ways. It provides for the capture and distribution system, and that is for $2.4 million. It creates a single portal that will allow criminal justice users to access statewide repositories of information through a single point of entry. Currently, an officer in a squad car has to enter different databases several different times, and this is to provide a way for people to access that through a single point of entry. I was just going to highlight each project and then...
In CRIMNET?
In CRIMNET, and then ask Mr. Good to be available for detailed questions. E-charging, it's to develop an electronic system to prepare and transmit charging documents between law enforcement, prosecution offices, and the courts. Enhanced biometrics, $5.4 million. This replaces existing live scan fingerprint units that are reaching the end of their life cycle. It allows for more bells and whistles on those live scans as well, so that two-print fingerprints can be taken and slap prints and palm prints can be retrieved, which cannot currently occur. Next one is identity access management. This creates a single sign-on system, but it includes the security features so that we know who the people are that are entering the data system and ensure that they have access to the systems that they are trying to gain access to. Next one is the Minnesota National Incident-Based Reporting System. It replaces our Minnesota NIBRS system that is over 30 years old, and it's the main system that we use to report data from Minnesota to the FBI. And then the name event index system, the way that I understand this is it's sort of like a card catalog system in the library. It really links, eventually it will link a biometric to a person so that we know what information is available on what person. So it's like a card catalog in a library in that you get the card catalog to see what references are available in the library on a particular subject. With that very brief overview, I'll ask Mr. Good to come forward if there are specific questions.
So members have, we do have a day set aside for CRIMNET, so if we want to, I hope members will look closely at the budget and we can have a thorough discussion about this. This is they have a base budget of $34 million. This project is enormous, and we've made a commitment to it over the years, which I think is good, but I hope members will... be prepared to ask the folks from CRIMNET some hard questions about the budget and what their goals are, how long this is going to take. Is this going to be ongoing expenditures for years and years and years to come? I've met with Mr. Good. I'm sure many of you have. But anyway, we'll take a look at the budget and ask some of those questions when we... What date are we doing that, Mr. Paul? February 22nd will be the communications day. Representative Eastland, did you have a question?
Yeah, could I just ask one question, Mr. Chair? Just maybe a brief answer. On the access issue into the CRIMNET system, how is that proceeding as we move out state for more rural areas to be able to really begin to access this, the CRIMNET system?
Mr. Good, do you want to introduce yourself for the record?
Mr. Chairman, my name is Dale Good. I'm the Executive Director of the CRIMNET program at the BCA. Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, access is statewide. So part of the complexity of this, and that's, I really appreciate the opportunity on the 22nd to provide more information. Part of the complexity of this is there's a number of different systems that agencies and personnel, criminal justice personnel, have access to. The warrant system, the criminal history system, the predatory offenders, again, based on their role and the appropriate data policy, they have access to different systems. But that occurs statewide. There is a criminal justice data network that's maintained by the BCA that uses the MNET, uses the state network, and that goes to every law enforcement point of presence statewide.
Thank you, Mr. Gooden. We'll see you on the 22nd, and you'll have a...
prepared to answer all your questions.
Okay, very good. Thank you. Commissioner Ellison, you want to continue?
The next item is the Emergency Disaster Assistance State Match request for $1.1 million, and that's located on page 13 of your budget book. Basically, that request is to provide the federal match or the state match dollars for the federal disaster assistance that we received for the spring flooding that occurred in 2006 in the Red River Valley.
Any questions on this change item?
Then the next item is the Disaster Assistance Reform Act. We do have some dollars in our base funding to cover the state match when we have federal disasters that are declared. We are asking for additional funds to add to those dollars so that we're better prepared to reach our state match year to year. The next one is...
And, Commissioner, how much money is in that fund now?
It's Mr. Chair, it's $200,000 per year, and we're asking that be increased by $250,000 per year.
And that's on which page of the budget?
Page 13.
Okay, continue, please.
The next item is the request for $2.2 million for the biennium for pandemic flu preparations. It ensures the coordination of state agency infectious disease pandemic preparedness activities and the provision of assistance to local emergency managers to increase readiness for the event of a pandemic flu. The next item is...
One second, Commissioner. So I'm just curious about why this is coming under this budget when looking at the Minnesota Health Department of Health, which has the bulk of general fund appropriations for the possibility of a pandemic flu. Why is this coming under the DPS budget?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, I'm going to ask Chris Ivey to come forward in case I state something that isn't correct. But the health budget proposal that you have, they deal with the health system in the state of Minnesota. Through our emergency management division, we deal with all the emergency managers and local responders from that perspective. Last year, the Department of Health did provide a couple million dollars for us for our activities. This request is to continue the operations that we started under that request, and I'll ask Ms. Ivey to fill in the more details.
Mr. Carter, could you just tell us how much total is in the Health Department's budget?
Right. Mr. Chair, committee members, last year, just a little history on this. Last year in the 06 session, the legislature appropriated $5 million for the pandemic flu preparedness, and I believe $2.9 million of that went to the Department of Public Safety. This year in the Health Department budget, there is a change item that is asking for close to $20 million for the pandemic flu epidemic.
Mr. Chair and committee members, that is correct.
Can you, Ms. Ivey, can you introduce yourself for the record, and is there anything else you want to say about the budget?
For the record, my name is Chris Ivey. I'm the Director of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. And what Mr. Carter says is correct, that last year they transferred $2.9 million to the Department of Public Safety to enter into grant agreements with local emergency management, tribal governments, and other state agencies. We felt it was more appropriate to keep it in our budget so that we could track the expenditures in its appropriate place than having it go to the Health Department and be transferred to the Department of Public Safety.
So, Ms. Ivey, so then do local units of government then apply for grants for training? Is that how this, of the $2.9 million?
Mr. Chair, that is correct.
Question? Representative Dominguez?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I'm trying to understand this concept here. We had a tour over at the Hennepin County Medical Center about this pandemic flu preparation, and it seems like it would have went to Human and Health Services. This is my first time being elected, and I'm just trying to understand this. That's a lot of money, $2.2 million that's put in for what? Explain the program to me.
Ms. Ivey?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dominguez, this is an ongoing preparation process. The Department of Health change order really is focused on the health care system, the health delivery system, and the purchase of antivirals. So if you have $8 million worth of antivirals and you don't have any way to stockpile it, distribute it, secure it, that is basically a resource that is underutilized. So what this money does is it ensures that state agencies and local units of government have the plans and the procedures in place so that they can do that, so that they can also stay in business as a governmental unit and provide those critical government services. So portions of this money is to help for the community-based response, and a portion of this money also goes to ensure that we have service continuation plans in place, that we have training in place, and we have exercised our plans to make sure that when the pandemic happens, we will be ready to respond.
Mr. Chair, just a follow-up. Seeing that you said that you have people in place, are those folks equipped with different languages that may have to be used in this kind of action of your local emergencies? Or how does that work?
Ms. Idy?
Mr. Chair, Representative Dominguez, we are certainly working on that. We are, in cooperation with Health, a part of the emergency community health echo, emergency outreach, and it really is intended to go to those non-English speaking communities to not only explain what influenza pandemic is, but what they should be doing as a family unit to be preparing, and also how to listen to emergency broadcast messages, and also to ensure that we have non-English speaking on our hotlines if we have any kind of a disaster.
And just one quick, Mr. Chair. So you do have stuff in place at the present time that are working with community organizations or ECHO that would give out the emergency information?
I can't say it's completed, but it is certainly on its way to completion.
Thank you.
Thank you. Any other questions? Okay. Commissioner, you want to proceed?
The next item is the Gang and Drug Task Force's request for $2.5 million for the biennium. That's located on page 68 of your budget books. This item is to maintain consistent support of multi-jurisdictional gang and drug task forces, as well as the Metro Gang Strike Force. So this replaces the federal funds that we've been, able to use for this purpose in past years. The next item is a request for $400,000 for the biennium to create an interagency school safety center. This is in response to the school shootings that have occurred in Minnesota and nationally. It's to assist schools and local police and sheriffs to create and maintain safe school environments and to develop crisis intervention plans in the event of an incident.
Representative Hilstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Can you tell me how this grant process would work, because it's my understanding that school districts can already levy for this without voter approval.
Mr. Chair, Representative Hilstrom, this is not for a grant program. This is to create assistance that would be provided to local school districts in cooperation with their police and sheriffs to do assessments of their building, do assessments of their environment, figure out the safety plan that is appropriate for their school, and then to assist in implementing those plans. So it isn't a grant program.
Okay. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, the last item is compensation adjustment. This came out in the discussion of the forensic science labs. Because salary supplements have not been provided in the last 4 years to state agencies, the Department of Public Safety, as well as other state agencies, have had to absorb salary increases and union negotiated settlements within their base budget. And so that's part of what leads to the complication when we're talking about full-time equivalent positions. And so the request here is for $2.1 million. You'll see the compensation adjustment located in the budget book throughout the different divisions. And you'll see then how it, how much of that money goes to each division.
Thank you, Commissioner. Any questions? Okay, I believe that is it, Commissioner Ellison. Thank you very much for your presentation. We covered basically the overview of your budget today, so we won't need to do that tomorrow. Thursday we will have some of the crime victim programs talking about better women's shelters, sexual assault and general crime victims, talking to the committee about their budget needs. And as I indicated, we'll have a separate day for 911 and Armor. Then I guess we don't need to have you here tomorrow. We will have one bill on the agenda for tomorrow, Representative Tao's bill on the Asian Gang Task Force. And
Mr. Chair, you just mentioned in the beginning that you had some questions, some overall questions about the overall budget. Do you feel like you got those? Does everybody feel like they got those questions answered? Is there something specific that people wanted to cover that we didn't cover today?
I'm not seeing anyone ask have a request for questions, so I think we're okay for now. Representative Lilly? Yes, we do have one.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Commissioner. I'm one of the new members here as well, so I'm just kind of trying to get my arms around this budget and everything, but I was just wondering, is there anything, with all the things that we've kind of seen with Katrina and different things around the country, and I think the lessons that we can learn as a state and in local jurisdictions is that we can't trust the feds to come and help us, so we had an opportunity in our local community to have one of these emergency drills, and is there money in this budget to, like, grants for local jurisdictions to help these people to do, if it would be like a bomb drill or just different drills? We had a chance to do a drill in Maplewood, and it involved many jurisdictions, the counties, I think maybe the BCA as well, the sheriff counties, same thing. Anyways, cities, multiple cities, and there was a lot of things that were learned. They also included the business community, because it was real close to St. John's Hospital, and so they had people coming and going, so there was a lot of lessons learned. So is there money in here to offer grants to some of these local jurisdictions? And if it is, great. I'm happy to see that. Is there a way to get that in there? Because to me, that's really a big priority for our state.
Mr. Allison?
Maybe that's going to be answered or has been answered or some way along the line. Thank you.
Mr. Chair, Representative Lilly, we do have that program as part of our Division of Homeland Security and Emergency Management. And we receive federal grants to provide to locals, and we do use those dollars to conduct emergency drills as the one you mentioned on a regular basis. What might be helpful is Director Ide, who's the director of the Homeland Security Emergency Management Division, might stop by and have an opportunity to just stop by your office and give you more detail on that. So yes, there is money in that budget. It's part of our base budget, and I didn't cover all the base budget activities today.
Mr. I'm also looking at the budget book and realizing that there's several departments that are accounts that we did not cover. And I don't know if you, if members had a chance to look at these, the alcohol and gambling enforcement, Office of Justice programs. I don't know, Commissioner, if you wanted to, if there's anything that we should be.
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what we did the last time we were here was an overview of the whole department. And so we went through and just kind of gave highlights of the different activities of the different department and talked about the base budgets that are currently in play. What we did today then was talk about everything that's new that the governor is proposing for additional funding for the 08-09 biennium. Everything else that is in the budget book is funded at its base level, and so nothing would change in those different divisions over what we went through in the overview. Now I realize that was really quick and not very detailed, and so if you have further questions about any one of the divisions, we'd be happy to come back, give you more detail, continue the discussion tomorrow, whatever your pleasure is.
Maybe members should look at their budget, but the fire marshal is also under this budget. We didn't talk about their needs at all, but we do have a couple of questions now that before we set you free here, Commissioner. Representative Dominguez.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Deputy Commissioner, is there anything in this budget for reentry programs for male and female? And, Chair, are we also going to get some more information on CRIMNET? Are we going to have another presentation on that? Did you mention that?
Representative Dominguez, the reentry programs would come under the Department of Corrections, so and we will have a be spending more time on that particular issue. I know you're interested in it. And on February 28th, we'll have 22nd, we will have the CRIMNET discussion. Representative Hott.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to go back to wages and wage increases as long as it's fresh in my mind. Otherwise, it's going to fall out of it. And it's not that long a distance to the floor, but in a past life, I used to be a park and recreation director, and one time the administration came up and all excited, and they told me that they have finally given my guards an increase in salary. They increased the salary $1.25 an hour, and they got them up to the Metro Guards. But they didn't put any money, extra money, in the budget for those increases. The salaries went up, but the budget didn't go up. So then I had to drop guards from the staff and drop program in order to meet the new and increased salary increases. Now, is that equivalent to what we're doing here when we take the 10 salaries and disperse it within those higher salaries? I would like to know if the higher salaries we dispersed it to were authorized by union contract, authorized by state contract, or were they special salaries for qualifying scientists or something? Tell me about the salary increases that came from the positions that weren't hired. Commissioner?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, what's happened over the last 4 years is that the salary settlements that have been reached have been union-negotiated settlements. However, what's occurred is that we were not appropriated, not only public safety, but state agencies were not appropriated funds to cover those salary supplements. So we were given our base budget and had to absorb those 2% or 3% or 5%, whatever the increases were that were negotiated by the unions, we had to absorb them within our current budget. And so what you would see is an erosion then of positions, because in order to cover the current salary positions, we had to hold positions open. What we did this year, what state agencies did this year, is they were very adamant in saying, we need a salary adjustment. We need an adjustment to our salary, or asking for increases will not really result in increases in positions. It will only result in filling positions that we had to hold open in the past. And so what you see here in this budget is a request for salary adjustments to cover cover the increases that we anticipate in salaries, and then when we're asking for new positions, so that they really are new positions. So I hope that addresses.
Representative Haas, staff that explains it thoroughly to me, and I appreciate what has to be done in order to give raises when the budget doesn't give the raise. Thank you,
Representative Hillstrom.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. A majority of the governor's budget does not have inflation figured into the budget, and the Department of Corrections does have some inflation figured into theirs. Is there any inflation that would be on an ongoing basis figured into your portion of the budget?
Mr. Chair, Representative Hillstrom, I'm going to ask Mr. Ahrens to answer that question.
Mr. Ahrens?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is the purpose of the compensation adjustment. That is, it's not, I wouldn't call it inflation, but it is a dollar amount that basically would fund positions that we had funded in state fiscal year 2007. It would continue the funding of those positions in 8 and 9. We are assuming that there will be some increases. For one, the state's contribution to the retirement plan that goes up by 0.25% the first year of the next biennium, and another 0.25% the second year of the biennium. There's also assumption that insurance costs will go up, as well as there will be some raises. And the last two bienniums we've had, as Deputy Commissioner Ellison stated, we had wage increases based on the negotiated union contracts. However, we had no increased funding for those to cover those wages. So, in essence, what happens, we end up holding some positions vacant as they become vacant to fund the people that are working there. And I would like to just point out another document. We got in discussion about the FTE as it pertains to the forensic laboratory. In late November, early part of December, as required by law, the Department of Finance does release the base budget of the agency. And that was an item that was released on Department of Finance's website. And I'm sure Gary Carter has a copy of that. I don't know if members were distributed copies of the base budget. But in looking at the base budget, for instance, on the Forensic Science Service, and that's on page, it's not part of the governor's recommendation, but it's the budget that was released back in November. That would have been on page 31. And I'll just give you the FTE count that is on that report. In state fiscal year 2007, the base for the Forensic Science Lab was 98.6 FTE. It went down to 90 FTE in state fiscal year 2008, and then down to 85.6 FTE in state fiscal year 2009. So that's where we started from. And why the FTEs are going down, and when you're looking at that document, was the fact that we are making assumptions that there will be wage increases, that there will be insurance increase, and we do know about the state's contribution to the retirement. So with all those things factored in, we factored in those costs, and then we look at, well, how much of our budget covers those costs? Well, it doesn't cover it. So in looking at that, we said, well, what is that equivalent to in terms of FTEs? How many positions are we going to be down if we don't get additional funding? If we're just assuming that we go into the next binding with the same level of funding, that we're going to lose positions. We're not going to be able to fund as many positions in the next binding that we're funding currently. And that's why when I mentioned that we'd be down by 4.6 in the first year and then 8.4 the second year, that's how we get to that point. And as I stated, with this compensation adjustment that is part of our overall agency budget, that we gain back some FTEs. In other words, we're going to fund not all of the 8.4 that we'd be losing, but we'd be funding at least 5.2 of the 8.4. So there is some erosion there. But overall, the compensation adjustment helps significantly the agency. Otherwise, we would be losing a number of positions. And if you look at page 27 in your budget document, this is the program page for criminal apprehension. And there you can see where we have the compensation adjustment. Under the direct appropriation by fund, general fund, you have the governor's recommendation. You can see the three change requests that we have out of the general fund, the third being the compensation adjustment. $582,000 is recommended by the governor in the first year of the biennium, and $1,210,000 the second year. That $1,210,000 is equivalent to about 15.7 FTEs. If we didn't get this funding, we'll lose approximately 15.7 positions in the BCA alone. And we have the same thing when you look under miscellaneous special revenue and as well as under the trunk highway. So each of these direct appropriation funding sources, we are getting a compensation adjustment to at least in an effort to maintain what we have right now. Without this, you will see that we'll be actually losing positions in the BCA. And this is true in other program areas throughout public safety.
Mr. Chair, as a follow-up to the question that I had. I'm sorry. I'll just be brief. Perfect. If you could request from all of the departments under your jurisdiction the picture of what they have done over the last 5 years in terms of how many FTEs it says they're authorized versus how many really have been filled over time, I think that would give us a great picture when it comes to salary supplements at the end. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
We will do that. Representative Olin.
I think to some degree you've answered mine, but the question I'd ask at this stage, when you say FTEs, what are we basing the FTEs on? Today's salaries or the ones we know might have been will be negotiated in later? How are we figuring those FTEs?
Mr. Chairman, Representative, when I refer to the FTEs, I'm looking at what the projected costs will be in each of those years. And taking the total FTE, well, what's the average FTE? That's how I come up with that.
So you have the salaries.
Representative Olin.
Yes.
Representative Haas, you're next.
Yeah, I just have a comment for educational purposes, because I've been through this system and it's a real irritating mess, because if you actually cut positions, then you have relocation or dislocated worker costs, then you have a seniority shift. So if you take a person out, they may be able to bump somebody else, and then they have a whole process of bumping. So in order to make this all balanced for people, qualified people like we're hearing testimony today, you have to have open positions in order to use the open position money to balance out the rest of your budget. Then critics will say it didn't hurt because you didn't really have to cut a position. You already had open positions that you weren't using. And that is a catch-22 that makes my lips quiver, because it really is frustrating from trying to make a budget balance when money isn't put in for inflation. Thank you for that, and I don't need absolution at all.
Let's have Mr. Carger will add a few words of wisdom to the.
Yes, Mr. Chair, members, on this compensation issue, it is somewhat complicated. The governor is recommending from the general fund a 2% increase every year. And most of our agencies, they're funded by the general fund. We have some special revenue, trunk highway funds. In that case, the governor is recommending, I think it's a 3.25% increase a year. For corrections, he does it a little differently, and he's saying he's going to budget at what the agreements are with the bargaining units. However, the governor also told agencies that they were directed to budget for a 3.25% increase. And as Mr. Aaron said, I mean, they've got your salary increases, you've got your step increases in agencies. I think agencies are still giving achievement awards out. You've got health care increasing. I think they're estimating that at around 10% a year and some other things. So that's just a little history of what the governor is recommending and what finance has been telling agencies.
Mr. Chairman, Mr. Carter is absolutely correct about all the costs we have there. But I will point out that public safety has not given achievement awards for some time because of the budget situation. We do see that as a discretionary cost, and we have not followed through with any type of achievement awards for at least the last 4 to 6 years.
Thank you, Mr. Aaron. So we have one more question, Representative Dominguez, or two more questions.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just so I can understand this, so in these budgets, compensation is not included in any of these budgets?
Mr. Aaron.
Mr. Chairman, Representative, that is the purpose for the governor's recommendation, that we are assuming that there will be cost increases. We know of costs. Increases. We know there are step increases. We're projecting there's going to be insurance increases. We had an insurance increase that took place in January of this year. For that's 6 months into this fiscal year. So if you annualize that, that's additional cost for the next biennium. We know for certain, based upon action taken by the legislature last session, that we have states' contribution to retirement costs. That's a quarter, that goes up a quarter percent each year. So those are real costs that we know that we have, and that it really is the purpose of this compensation adjustment that the governor is recommending. It doesn't fund us fully, but it does go a long ways to cover our projected cost increases for the next biennium.
Representative Isla.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Makes me nervous to have Representative Haas quivering next to me, but I have just related to his question, and I think I know the answer, but there have been no layoffs that have been generated because of the positions that have not been filled. That's just been kind of a not filling positions that have been vacated. Is that basically the way that has worked in the system?
Mr. Ahrens?
Mr. Chairman, Department of Public Safety has had layoffs that did take place based on some previous cuts that we had in previous bioniums. I know it doesn't fall into this division, but in State Patrol, our Capital Security area, we did have a number of layoffs there due to budget reductions and the fact we didn't have compensation increases. We also, and driver vehicle services, we had a number of positions, people that were laid off in that division due to lack of any type of compensation increase, and we also had budget reductions in those areas.
Mr. Chair, Representative Eastland, we've also had two layoffs in the Office of Justice programs that are in this budget.
Okay, Mr. Chair, I mean, I think that what Representative Hillstrom asked for, it would be interesting to kind of see the complement of people that we have working every day and how that relates to the FTEs and how that maybe has kind of changed over time. I think that might be an interesting picture for us to see.
I think Mr. Carter can provide the committee that. Representative Hillstrom, may I have a last question?
Yeah, Mr. Chair, just as a follow-up to that as well, bouncing off Representative Eastland's question, if we could also get a list of what the layoffs have been over the last 5 years so we have a full picture of where we are. That would be great.
Commissioner, can you provide that to us?
Mr. Chair, a list of how many people have been laid off in the last 5 years? Yes.
Okay. All right, members, just a quick announcement, too, that our tour of Red Wing this Friday is canceled, but you're all welcome to join the Senate Public Safety Budget Division on their tours. When is that? On February 23rd, the Senate is also going to Shakopee, which is our facility for women, on February 16th. So we've been invited to attend those tours with the Senate. Is there any other questions for the committee? If not, meeting's adjourned.